Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Bankroll Burners, the podcast for poker players who can't stop getting it in bad. I'm Mike.
And I'm Josh.
And today we have a treat for you. It's round two of Mike versus Josh. Which one of us will get the better of the other this time? Wait, see.
Yeah, and this is going to be a real high-stakes, high-leverage game. We played a 10 cent, 20 cent version of our favorite online home game. This one, I would add, was even more sort of fun and splashy than many of the ones that we play. Our typical online home game is with people who are some very good poker players and some people who are just around for the fun.
Who are very good players.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, like, really good. Like, if they have podcasts, you should listen to them because they're, like, they're great. And then this game was just with a couple of our buddies who wanted to play for fun. So I think both of us were trying to play a little, you know, play more hands. It was a four-handed game, so stacks were flying, coolers were flying. It was just a good time was had by all. I was playing literally while I was at the casino. We were just all doing great.
Yeah, I mean, this was like, you know, this was two of our friends who don't really play poker, so it was like they just wanted to goof around a little bit, so we were like, sure, why not? So this was a good time, and, you know, the hands against our poor compatriots, you know, we don't have much to share. We just own their asses all night long.
But, I don't recall that being how it worked.
No, that's for sure what happened. But the hands that Josh and I played against each other, you know, we did have some pretty fascinating ones, I will say. So we have two we want to go through, two kind of big pots, you know.
Huge pots. Big pots in terms of big blind, you know, don't knock them.
Exactly. So why don't we get started here with this first hand. In this particular hand, I was holding Jack 10 of diamonds in the small blind, or excuse me, in the under the gun position. I apologize.
You were under the gun, which is also the cutoff in this game.
Yes, the cutoff slash under the gun. And Josh was holding a king of diamonds, seven of diamonds, so a little bit of a already preflop cooler potential. Josh sitting in the big blind.
Yep, exactly. So I'm in the big blind. You know, I see my king seven of diamonds, and this is exactly the kind of game it is. I'm like, I'm never folding this hand.
Never.
So. It's a premium, and if you've been with us for a while, you know my proclivity for suited kings. Don't like folding those hands regardless. But as it happens, I was not in a situation where I had to fold it, as the only action preflop was Mike making a nitty 3x raise to 60 cents, three big blinds, and I, of course, am going nowhere, and I like to call. I could honestly probably 3-bet this once in a while, in the big blind especially, just because we want to be so polarized, and my 3-bet bluffs want to be significantly junkier, and this certainly qualifies.
Yeah, that's definitely true. You could 3-bet here sometimes. I will just one note, the effective stack here is $60, so we are playing 300 big blinds deep here, baby.
Awesome. So we've got, and after this, of course, we're going to be quite deep. There's a $130 in the pot, and there's like 59 behind. So the stack to pot ratio is immense. Let's see what happens.
Yeah. Okay. So the flop is, you know, so fairly standard preflop. The flop rolls off a bit of what some refer to as an action flop. We get king of clubs, queen of clubs, seven of spades, and action is on Josh over here. So what were you thinking when this flop came out, Josh?
I was thinking, you know, dollar signs in my eyes for sure. Top and bottom pair, basically the nuts in this game, just because I know Mike's opening range is going to be quite wide. That said, I was kind of weighing even at the beginning as I kind of figured, you know, first of all, this board is not great for my range, so of course I'm going to check. And I was also thinking I may or may not check raise here because I definitely have a lot of strong hands to check raise, left definitely a lot of king, queen, probably some pocket sevens as well. And this is a good board for you. So I was kind of thinking I'm not sure what I'm going to do just yet, but definitely leading things off with a check.
Yeah, for sure. I think you always want to check here. And I go ahead and I go ahead and bet a dollar. I am going to be betting larger on the larger side on a board like this, a double Broadway board, a particularly wet double Broadway board with a flush draw on it, I guess, is more what so what I mean. So a double Broadway board with flush draw. We are allowed to do some pot size and overbetting on double Broadway boards, usually containing an ace, and this doesn't contain an ace. So probably not going to be overbetting. And the fact that it's a flush draw means that, you know, we don't even necessarily have to go huge. We could just go half pot. But I do like to go more like three quarters pot here. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think the big sizing is good for a number of reasons. And one of them is also that it could definitely freeze hands like mine. When you use a big sizing, you know, you might be doing so with a more polarized range where a lot of the value that you're taking is actually better than mine, or, you know, has a lot more equity than some of the value that you'd be taking if you're using a smaller sizing. Like, you know, you might bet like any King X for a smaller sizing, for example. But here you're probably not betting all King X if you're taking this large sizing.
It's interesting. I mean, I think certainly like in a ring game, you know, if I'm taking a big sizing like this, no, I'm not going to be betting all King X. But when we're four-handed and I open in the cutoff slash under the gun, I do have a lot of hands here. So like, even if I'm deciding that I'm going to take a more polarizing line on the slot, meaning I'm not going to range bet, I'm not going to bet all my hands, I'm going to have some checks. I do still think that like I probably miss this board enough that I could probably just take top pair and better for a large sizing.
Yeah. Well, with that being the case, and I wasn't really considering the four-handed nature in that respect. I mean, with that in mind, I probably should be raising this hand.
Oh, like, for sure. I mean, that's going to be my question is, like, why didn't you raise? Was it, like, to slow play?
No, it wasn't really to slow play. It was more, you know, it's a big bet. I tend to check raise a little bit less against big bets. So, you know, I'm kind of happy keeping it fairly tight. But I think I should have raised here. But I didn't in this case.
Yeah, I agree. I think a raise with your specific holding is in order because I will call with all King X, which I'm probably betting most of, as we discussed. And also, if you're only really betting hands that are better than yours, meaning King, Queen, or sevens, that's like it. If those are the only hands you're check raising, you know, you don't get to bluff with much ever. So you're basically doing no raising here if you're not raising your holding.
Yeah, and that's totally wrong.
Unless you're slow playing, which is also allowed.
I don't really think I should be check raising this board because there are a lot of cards that are quite bad for me. Obviously, we don't really want to see an ace, a club, like a jack or 10, because those complete like a lot of two pairs that you could have, or various other draws. So I think our hand does benefit from protection as well. And of course, we're out of position, so getting the betting lead is also nice. So for all these reasons, I think check raising is a great option. But I didn't, and I'm immediately punished as the turn rolls off. A club, but the seven of clubs, completing the front door flush and boating me up.
So
I start by checking, of course, because I don't think there's, I don't think this card is better for me.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think the bottom card pairing is actually particularly good for... I think the bottom card pairing is often good for the pre-flop aggressor, just because the bottom card pairing shouldn't change all that much. Like, I might not even defend all... I guess I probably am defending all my 7x, but...
I mean, not like suited 7s.
I mean 7x. I don't know if I'm defending all my 7x on the flop. Probably should be this deep, but I think when you bet large, I'm allowed to start folding some bottom pairs. Also, not having a club, I'm a little, you know, I don't necessarily want to just, like, with my range, I don't know. I don't think this card is great for my range.
I think that you probably should defend most 7x, given the configuration.
Yeah.
Because you just are so wide, and I'm so wide. So I think you should defend most 7x on the flop. And I do think this card is good for you in theory because you should have, especially because I took the large sizing, I shouldn't really have much 7x at all. You can have some, and you have more, you should have more flushes than me here.
Yes, although I would probably be check raising. You know, a lot of my bluffs on the flop would come from check raises, most likely. I mean, from, all my bluffs on the flop would come from check raises, and some of them would even be flush draws.
Some of them would. Yeah. Although, yeah, I mean.
So, you know, I feel like I could go either way, but this is also not a card I expect you to slow down on a whole lot.
Really? Even yeah. though, like, the flush completes?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't. I think, you know, I've kind of tried to take this advice to heart that, you know, it's I'm over being scared of two-card flushes, right? Like, especially when you're sort of betting, like, you know, I think in general, something I've tried to do more is as the aggressor, when a flush completing card rolls off on the turn, to not just slow down because there's more protection, there's more value in protecting your hand from a fourth of that suit than there is, like, in sort of pot control a lot of the time.
Interesting. Yeah, I think that that's fair. I think that's good advice generally. I guess, like, for me, the common, you know, in game, I'm thinking like the combination of the flush completing where you can, like, you can have a lot of junky flushes here. Like, you complete it from the big blind, you can literally have, like, three six of clubs.
Certainly.
You know? And I, you know, versus my cutoff open, you probably are allowed to defend that, you know, especially me in this splashy game.
Yeah. So were you sort of planning then on, in this spot to kind of bluff with your hands, really, really structure your bluffs around sort of high clubs to have more equity against all my like crap that flushed up here?
Yeah, I don't really like my specific hand anymore because there's like a lot of like I don't have that many clean outs. Certainly, and like if I make my hand, it's gonna be like ooh.
Yeah, so maybe I'm allowed to do some donking here, yeah. But I don't know. I don't.
I mean, let's say I have a king here. I mean, I know that in game you were thinking I had mostly stronger kings, but or two pairs or some sets. But like, obviously, if I have a set, I'm you know you're first of all you're about to lose a lot of money. But but like if I had like king queen here, I'll probably continue. But if I just had like King Jack. I mean, are you thinking that I'm going to be betting this card a lot? Like
not a lot, but I guess the other piece is that if I'm going to be doing some donking, I'd probably rather do it with 7x that doesn't contain a king, because like I want to unblock your continuing range and having, you know, I'd rather, I mean, if I have Queen 7 suited here, like that's probably a better donk candidate here, which I definitely do have Queen 7 suited here. I definitely will say most certainly in my range. You know, if I've got even A7, right, I'd probably rather, or Jack-7 or something like that, that just kind of unblocks the board a little bit better.
So you would donk with, like, most sevens, you think?
Probably. I think thinking about it now, I still don't love donking here, because I do think you're going to continue a fair amount, and I think that I don't want to, like, fold out any of your, like, chaff also. Mm-hmm. And having a hand like A7, or especially a hand like Jack-7 is a great donk candidate, I think, because it blocks a lot of your draws that might check back, like a Jack-10, but it unblocks a lot of the value.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I do. I mean, I see the merit to not donking your hand, and of course, very few people even have a donk range at all. So, I think it's reasonable to check here. But I, sitting with Jack-10 of diamonds, I think I have a pretty clear check back and try to realize my equity type of situation.
Yeah,
I'm not blocking any thick value. Like I just have sort of like my hand is bad. Like, you know, I think this is just sort of a give up type of situation, and maybe I make a straight on the river and yay, but I just don't really think I'm getting folds much here with, if I continue and, you know, if I get check, I mean, I guess getting check raise, I can comfortably fold my hand, but if I check back, you know, I have a chance to make a strong hand. You know, I do have six kind of clean outs.
So. Yeah. So in the end, the turn does go check. And the river rolls off the ace of spades, which is a great card for me. Because it does not put a fourth club on the board. It is an ace, and it does complete the jack 10 straight. I, at this point, elect to check once again. And the reason for this is because I don't really think there are any hands that you're going to do a whole lot of calling with once you check the turn that wouldn't bet the river if checked to. Mm-hmm. So I think like a check raise, you know, theoretically like might just will put you in a very tough spot with a lot of hands. I wasn't really thinking about Jack 10. I was more thinking about various like Ace X hands that you might have here. Ace X with the Ace of Clubs is a hand that is now going to be put in a pretty tough spot by a check raise. So I check. I just think you have so many bets here.
I do. I agree. I think checking here is appropriate. I mean, you could, like, I think if I have a king here, you know, I am going to check back.
Yeah.
So I think what you have to hope is, like, I have a hand that will bet, which would be like an ace, basically, like, or two pair. You know, that, like,
right. King,
basically, exclusively. So, I mean, I don't hate. I mean, but you also, by checking, you give me an opportunity to bluff. Of course, then I'm not going to call your check raise. But I certainly think donking here could, you know, blocking here, you can get called by some worse hands that will check back. Like, maybe I would call with, like, King Jack with the Jack of clubs. But
yeah, but, you know, I do think you're...
I like a check. I prefer...
Yeah, I do think you're betting a lot of that on the turn, a lot of King X. And I also don't know that I'm always getting called by, like, a king without a club, which you might decide to, like, value, you might decide is strong enough to value bet on the, you know, at the end after I kind of check turn, check river.
Yeah. And I will say, just for those only listening, the board right now is seven of spades, queen of clubs, king of clubs, seven of clubs, and the river is the ace of spades. Josh has checked to me. I have Broadway. I think a value bet is in order here. I can get called by, you know, some trips. I can an ace, a random ace, random king, random, maybe a random queen, probably not. But certainly by trips, an ace or a king, I think it would be a mistake not to value bet here.
Yeah, I agree. I think you definitely have to bet.
And I go ahead and I bet $1.60. So about half the pot. I do think that taking a large size here is probably a mistake. I think it lets you get away too easily if I bet very large.
Yeah.
I think a smaller size puts your range, especially because this ace sort of downgrades a lot of your hands. So I really don't want to use a particularly large sizing. So I think a smaller size is in order. And typically on the river, small sizing is about half pot.
But, and of course, I am sitting here with a full house with sevens full of kings. I just assume I'm always best here. If he has, like, aces that he slow plays, you know, so be it. That's pretty much the only hand that beats me at this point, because I do think ace-seven, king-seven, ace-seven, kings, and queens are always going to keep betting the turn. So I decide to raise. This is not a board that I'm probably raising all that much in this spot, especially, you know, just because... I mean, it is kind of a scary board for me. So I decide to go big, and I pot the raise up to 8-10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is... I feel pretty gross when this happens. As you can all imagine, it sucks to sit there with Broadway and get check raised on a paired flush board. I do think I have a pretty horrid bluff catcher. I actually, you know, I unblock all the flushes. I don't block any full houses. You know, I'm not paired, so I literally don't block any full houses. I do unblock the backdoor flush draw on the flop. That's like it. You know, but like, how much of that is even really represented here? That's not already paired up. You know, there's not even a ton of that. Yeah. So,
I mean, it's interesting because I do think you beat some of my value. Like, I can probably raise, like, trips for value here once the turn goes check, check. Maybe.
But, would you take such a big sizing with trips?
I don't know. Maybe. If I wanted to get value from, like, ace X, like, make it look bluffy, possibly. But I don't know. It's kind of weird. It's a weird spot. And maybe my raise sizing should be a little smaller if I have a lot of raises. But also I might donk with trips as previously mentioned. So
on the turn, yeah.
Yeah, on the turn. So it's an interesting spot, and maybe, you know, maybe I really should kind of keep it to flushes and boats here.
Yeah, I mean, my thought in game was that you would not take the sizing with trips.
Right.
That's what I thought in game. And maybe, I mean, you are allowed to have multiple sizings, of course, on the river if you would like to take a smaller raise size with your trips. But I mean, you probably do get called by a lot of my ace-x if you make a small raise with trips, I would think. So that's not crazy. But I guess when you take this sizing, my thought is you either have a flush, a boat, or nothing. And I think I just have a horrendous bluff catcher. I don't know. I mean, do you think that's a fair assessment?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, I mean, you know, what hands are you playing this in this manner that makes a better bluff kit catcher? Like, you're kind of thinking, like, you know, a hand like King Jack with the Jack of Clubs is, like, a better hand to call with here.
I also think Ace King is a hand that I can have here.
Yeah, sure. And Ace King blocks some of those boats. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I think if you sort of do the range analysis, I don't know how high up in the range you are, but I guess if you have enough, I mean, even like Ace X might be a better hand to call with if you kind of narrowed me down there where you block like Ace 7, which I could have.
Right. I guess that was my question for you is like, do you think having an ace here is a makes a better for a better bluff catcher? Like, do you have a lot of boats that contain an ace? I mean, you just have like
Ace 7.
Ace 7, which is really a small part of your range. I don't know how critical it is to block that.
Yeah, so probably having kings, queens is nice. I mean, honestly, like if you have a 7 yourself, which I guess I don't know if you ever do after checking the turn, that would be a good bluff catcher because that blocks like a lot of my boats.
Yeah.
I don't know how often you're going to be checking back the turn with trips.
Yeah, I probably am not checking the turn. It's trips. I mean, it's really interesting to think about what your range even looks like here. I mean, what are your bluffs, first of all? I think that's an important question, too. Like, what are you check raising here as a bluff?
Right. And that is interesting. I mean, it's kind of hard to find bluffs. Like, maybe hands like Queen Jack with the Jack of Clubs, like stuff like that. Just because any hand with the Ace of Clubs, I'm probably not turning into a bluff because it's right, now paired. It made top pair, so I'm probably just check calling. So, you know, we'd have to have some other club, and maybe a hand like Queen Jack, Queen 10 with a club is my best option here because it blocks some of your strong, like Jack 10, it blocks flushes, it blocks like King Queen, Ace Queen. Maybe hands like 9-8 or stuff, something like that.
Nine eight, I think, is good because you block some 7x.
Right, exactly. But I think I like Queen Jack or Queen 10 better just because I think that they have better blocking properties. Because as mentioned, I don't think you'd be doing a lot of checking back with trips. So that's probably what I'd be bluffing with.
Yeah, well, given that makes Jack 10 an even worse.
Yeah.
Bluff catcher. I think I mean, look, you know, I get to fold a lot because your raise is so big. You know, I get to fold half my hands that I play this way. I mean, I do have some bluffs, obviously. Those are snap folds. But, you know, having ace X is, it's not great, but it's probably just better than Jack 10 of diamonds.
Yeah.
I think Jack 10 of diamonds is probably one of the worst value bets I make on the river to then call a raise with.
Yeah. I think that's
so fair. Naturally, I called the raise.
Yeah, he called pretty quick.
Thank you for reminding everyone. I mean, there's a shot clock on. It's not like I can call that slowly.
And then he said, "Cooler City" in the chat.
That did happen.
So we rake in a nice spot with King 7, which is always a plus, and we're pretty happy about that.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a bummer. Definitely a pretty easy fold for me that I didn't make. So this just shows how good I am at not improving despite all the lessons I've learned, which is a what they call a motif of the Bankroll Burners podcast.
Yeah, we're not called, again, as I like to say, we're not called Bankroll Builders.
Unless that's like referring to what we do for other people.
Right, right.
Okay, well, I think we can move on to the second hand here, if that sounds good to you.
Let's do it. So this is another hand from the same game. In this hand, I'm in the small blind. Mike is in the big blind. And this hand is Action City. Under the Gun, which again is the cutoff, which is another one of our friends, raises to 0.8, 80 cents, which is a 4x open. And do you have the effective stacks here? Actually, it looks like it's...
I do have the effective stacks. So
looks like it's about 40.
It's about $40 between you and me. Yeah. And the other player in the hand who you just mentioned makes it, it is an effective stack of $30.
Yep. And I'm not worried about them because they don't matter after the preflop action. So Under the Gun raises to 0.8, which is, again, a little bit big because I think the standard open this game has been 60 cents. But as we mentioned, there may or may not be strategy involved in the raise sizing here, or, you know, it's online, it's easy to click buttons. I've done it, Mike's done it, you've done it if you've played online poker. Anyway, next to act, the button, which is me. I'm on the button in this hand? I'm on the button.
You are on the button.
I'm on the button. Well, all right. Josh is on the button. I look down at King of Hearts, King of Diamonds.
A nice hand.
This is Red Kings, great hand to look at, and I raised to 240. I'm just gonna 3x it despite the larger raise.
So I see Josh preying upon our poor friend, and I cannot. I'm assuming he's just bullying him around for being inexperienced at poker with some trash. So I decide to punish Josh's light 3-betting with my own ace 5 of spades. And I go ahead and cold 4-bet up to $6.60.
Mike 4-bets with ace 5 of spades, which, by the way, is a fantastic cold 4-betting candidate. If you're going to do some light cold 4-betting, you really, it must have felt like you were just put in the most perfect spot to punish me.
Absolutely, I was excited.
And it folds back to me, so the big blind folds, the original razor folds, and I don't think I should be 5-betting here. I mean, we're 200 big blinds deep. I don't think it makes a whole lot of sense to do any 5-betting, and I also want to keep your bluffs in if you do happen to be getting out of line with some hand that I'm just crushing. So I'm in position, so all those things, perfect storm, we just call.
So, I'm pretty bummed that Josh called, of course. Less bummed when the flop comes ace of clubs, 9 of diamonds, 8 of diamonds.
Ace of clubs, 9 of diamonds, 8 of diamonds. We got which, of course, pair. Makes Mike top pair. What a suck out.
I know, right? I'm way too good at this game. So I naturally know that an ace high flop on a 4-bet in a 4-bet board, I know that Josh knows that I know that I have a ton of ace x here. Most of the hands I have contain an ace. So what I want to do is take his non-ace containing hands and put them in a horrible spot. So I go ahead and make a very small bet of $2.20. So less than 20% of the pot. It's like, what is that, like 15% or so?
Yeah, it's like a sixth pot. Yeah. And yeah, this is exactly what it's designed to do, because now I'm sitting here with pocket kings. I've got a backdoor flush draw. Obviously, I know that Mike is going to have a lot of aces. I mean, even his 4-bet bluffs are probably mostly going to be ace-high hands. Maybe he's got the... I mean, he probably should have some other hands, hands like pocket queens and pocket jacks that I'm beating, that he's definitely cold 4-betting with. Possibly some suited connectors, which, of course, have connected quite well with this board. But I don't really think I have any other option other than to call. I don't know. Do you think I'm allowed to fold if I don't have the backdoor flush draw here? Like if I have black kings, or do you think I should still be calling once?
I think you do have to call once, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's kind of what I figured. I don't think I even noticed the backdoor flush draw as in real time. I was like, this sucks. I'm probably behind, but I can do no folding here. I have a pair and I could be ahead.
And this is exactly what the small bet is designed to do. So. Going all right.
Yeah. So that adds 450 to the pot. There's about 1950 in there, and we've got like 31 behind.
Okay. The turn rolls off the 5 of diamonds, which does complete the flush, and gives me aces up, 2 pair. I'm not worried about Josh having a flush almost ever here. The only flushes. Or some, like, he may have some, like, king, queen of diamonds, king, jack, or king, 10 of diamonds, but a lot of those hands will raise flop, I think, so.
What about ace king? Or ace queen of diamonds?
I mean, that's also possible, yes. But, where you would just, like, you could absolutely smash this board with those hands. Yeah, but, I mean, it's just such a small portion of your range, bottom line, is flushes here.
But you do something kind of interesting here, and I'm interested to hear your reasoning behind checking this board.
Yeah, I checked with the intent of check raising.
Right. So you're kind of thinking I may perceive that as weakness, hop on it, and bet.
Exactly. I mean, I think that if you have an ace here, like ace king, ace queen, ace jack, ace 10, you will bet them, I suspect.
I don't think
maybe
I don't,
not,
I don't
maybe
think
not as 10. Maybe not as 10.
I don't know if I would, because I do think that you can check, you know, ace king, ace queen, ace jack here sometimes if you kind of think that. Although I don't even know. I think you probably should have more flushes than I should. Just being the four better, being the last aggressor, you're more likely to have these like suited connectory or ace high, you know, ace x of diamonds hands than I will in general.
Yeah.
But I don't know that I'm going to be betting my ace high all the time. I don't know that my like ace 10, ace jack, ace queen necessarily want to play for stacks or necessarily can get stacks in against worse hands. So I'm probably checking back here a lot unless I show up like with a flush.
Right.
I don't know what my bluffs are really here either. Maybe hands like jack 10, although my jack 10 shouldn't really have a diamond, so it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think you probably can bluff with jack 10 here because you're just like flushes and four bet pots, like flushes are just such a small part of the equation.
Yeah. So yeah, maybe jack 10 is a bluff here, and I really don't think I'm betting all that often here.
Yeah. I think you're right. I think it was a mistake for me to check here, to be honest with you. I think I should have continued to bet. One thing I've been working on lately, I've been trying to shunt a lot of my turn range from out of position into checks. I think it makes you, and just do a lot of check raising, both for value and as bluffs. So that's sort of something I've been trying to put into practice, and it seems to be working quite well for me, at least in some of these more online type games where players are more liable to bet when check two on the turn. So I think I was just possibly overdoing that and maybe checking here. I think it's a bad check ultimately because I am blocking top pair here, which is really the hand I'm hoping to get value from with a check raise. And you won't even always bet it, like you said. So
yeah, I think you can like bet, just keep betting small. I don't think this is really a good spot to go geometric necessarily either. If you're trying to get value from sort of my weak ace high hands. I mean, I guess at this point you're hoping I have like ace king.
Right.
But I still think, you know, you can kind of bet small again here and then like jam the river for like pot. You know, if you bet like, I mean, even if you bet like a quarter again or a third, you're still going to set up quite a small river jam all in all.
Yeah. No, I think that's really interesting. I wouldn't have thought of that in game, but continuing to bet small. I mean, usually you want to continue to go small for one of two reasons when you're out of position. One reason being it's geometric to go small. So that's like a reason. Sometimes, you know, if you want a geometric meaning, you want to bet the same percentage of the pot on the turn and river, then you can just continue to go small from out of position. Usually in position, that's less common. But from out of position, you can, you know, take a less than half pot size, you know, a third, a quarter, whatever, and just keep going. Another reason you might do it is if the card, the turn card significantly downgrades a lot of villains' range, which I don't think is the case with this card. So I don't know if in theory betting super small here makes a ton of sense, but I do see like how, on the other hand, I do see how it would put you in a very difficult position with a lot of your range. So.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's okay to just like bet half pot and go geometric, which I think is what it would basically be. If you bet like 10 bucks, then you'd have a half pot sizing on the turn and on the river. And that probably accomplishes something similar. And I'm just kind of thinking about my pocket pairs specifically, which are definitely going to fold to a big bet. Although, yeah, I mean, it's interesting too, because obviously, if I have hands with like the ace of diamonds or the king of diamonds, I probably will be defending even to a half pot size bet.
Yeah, I mean, if I had bet any amount here, I assume you call pretty much.
Yeah, unless you jam.
Right, of course, but that would be insane.
Yeah, but that it's interesting. I don't know if I'm allowed to start folding, like if I have like weak aces, if I can start kind of folding like ace four, ace three, ace two to like a fairly meaty bet on the turn. Possibly.
Probably.
Yeah, like if I have ace deuce of hearts here and you bet 10, you know, your range is just so ace heavy, and you might not do that with like kings, queens, jacks all the time.
Yep. Yeah, so I think probably half pot bet is in order here. I think it was a mistake for me to check, but I checked, so I'm a donk, and now it's not, you're in position. You've been checked too. You're sitting here with
kings
and a diamond.
Just the easiest check back ever. I have like, you know, I'm behind so much of your range. I figure you might check back with some weaker aces, or you might check with some weaker aces. I really don't want to get jammed on. I think that a diamond is often going to be a clean out. And, you know, if I don't improve, I can pretty happily fold the river to a bet. So I'm just going to check back here and not turn my hand into a bluff at this point.
Yeah, pretty standard. Now, the river is a fun one. It comes the king of spades.
And don't I feel like a genius for not betting the turn?
Yeah. So just to recap the board, I have ace five of spades. Josh has red kings. The flop, it was a four bet pot pre-flop. The flop comes ace of clubs, nine of diamonds, eight of diamonds. I make a small bet. Josh calls. The turn is the five of diamonds, completing the flush and giving me aces up. It goes check, check. And the river is the king of spades, giving Josh a set of kings and me none the wiser, thinking that I need to start extracting some value from Josh's smaller pairs and worse, and asex.
Yep. And so Mike goes ahead, and I believe you bet right around half pot here.
Yeah, I bet $9.30. I don't know if that's the right sizing, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like, you know, can't go wrong with half pot, as we learned long ago. I really think half pot does kind of make sense here. Like, I think the card is really good for your range, so you can bet kind of on the smaller side. Like, I don't think you need to bet big because, you know, you're just, I don't know that you're going to get value from a whole lot of hands if you bet big, but if you bet small, I probably at this point do have to defend with like some ace x, and probably do have to call with most of my ace x at this point, honestly, like ace queen, ace jack, ace 10, maybe even suited wheel aces. I might just need to like side call off at this point.
Yeah, versus if I bet really small here, like if I went one third or one quarter, I think you're like very happy to just call with those hands, versus like a half pot that sort of puts you in a spot.
Yeah, so I do like half pot. I think half pot makes a lot of sense with like most of your holdings that you do elect to bet.
Do I have a big size here? Like if I like, are there hands where I can just like, if I have myself aces, kings, nines, eights, probably don't have eights, but if I have aces, I probably have nines in this particular game.
If you have aces, kings, maybe even flushes, any flushes you kind of show up with, maybe ace king also.
Do I get to just rip it in your face?
Maybe.
I don't know. Like, that's a real question. Like, what am I trying to get called by when I jam like that?
I kind of feel like you can just rip it with those hands, because like it just puts all of my, like if I get here with like a worse two pair, I just like am in agony. I mean, I probably just snap call with two pair, to be honest.
Yeah.
Even though I probably shouldn't. And a hand like ace queen is in like just a really, really gross spot where it's like, you know, turn went check, check. How do I like play around this? Like, ugh.
Yeah, so I probably like do want to have two sizings on this river. Like, I do have this sort of half pot size, and then I maybe have an overbet jam size. So what, I mean, with bluffs, like
king queen, I think is a really good bluff.
Sure.
Maybe. Like a hand containing a king, it's like probably a really good hand.
To take for a larger, like that's probably a larger size jam versus, yeah, like,
exactly.
You know, maybe my jack tens are going to take a smaller size.
Because I think you do want to block some of my good value if you're going to jam, to lessen the chance that you just get snapped off. But I mean, that just kind of makes me think that like with a lot of, like maybe with a lot of ace x, you just kind of, like maybe you should just be jamming your ace x and just put all my one pair hands in just an awful spot. I don't know.
It's interesting. I don't know.
But maybe too, and maybe ace five is good enough to jam, because it just like, I'm just going to have so much, like my range is just so capped on the turn.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just, and then you just put all my like ace, you know, so maybe any two pair plus is good enough to kind of put into
the jam. I think
the
you may have ace king yourself here enough that I don't know that ace five, ace nine, ace eight are really particularly compelling jams.
Yeah, although ace king is probably where it does start becoming a bet a lot on the turn for me when check two.
Interesting.
Just
yeah.
Because I don't really think, like, ace king is just so strong. I don't, as you said, it's a four bet pot, which means that really we shouldn't have a whole lot of flushes in our range. So I probably would be betting ace king, because I kind of see, I mean, that's like, you know, that's getting into cooler territory where if I have ace king and you have ace five, like, you know, it is what it is, right?
Yeah, I agree. I do think I like having multiple sizes on this river, though, to be honest with you, like, rather than just having an all-in size, because, like, I do think, like, if I have a smaller size, like, with my own ace-queens and ace-jacks, like, can I bet those for value and get called by, you know, your sort of worse wheel aces, get called by your pocket tens, pocket jacks, pocket queens, where I take kind of this half-pot sizing. Yeah. With those worse.
Although I don't think you're really ever getting called by pocket tens through queens, to be fair.
Maybe not. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting.
I think it's okay to have multiple sizings, especially with like a hand like ace queen definitely benefits from like a small sizing where it can get calls from like really bad aces and then it obviously becomes a bet fold. And then, you know, if you want, then you obviously you do want to throw some stronger hands into the small bet, so that you can have some bet calls, because otherwise I can just attack that small sizing and raise always, which is not something that you want. So, you know, if you kind of put ace five in that, I guess you make it a bet call. Or maybe you put a hand like aces into the bets. Or maybe like you put a hand like kings yourself into the bet small, because it like unblocks all of my ace x.
Interesting.
I don't know, you know, because I do think you have to kind of structure... It's hard to structure, and the reason why I don't always use these two sizing schemes, and I probably don't use them in practice thinking about it, just because I feel like I do not have a good sense of how to structure them right. Because, like, obviously you kind of have to build them around blockers and unblockers and what you're trying to get value from or what you're trying to fold out. And that kind of makes, as if we go down this rabbit hole, it makes me think maybe ace five is, like, not a hand we want to put into the small sizing scheme, and maybe it's more like kings and eights and nines.
Well, I feel like aces is a better hand to use the small sizing with, like aces itself, because I am blocking a lot of the hands that you're forced to call with.
Right. Like if you jam, you don't want to jam with aces because I can probably fold most of the hands that I get there with.
Exactly.
Versus if you jam with like kings, then I probably have a lot. Then I have a lot more like ace queen or like two pair that I myself arrive with. Mm-hmm. So sure, that makes sense. But then yeah, I'm not sure what to do with these two pair type hands.
I think it probably is, you know, is fine like either way. I think like probably with ace five and ace king, like I would probably put ace king in the shove bucket and ace five in the small bet bucket. But it's not. It's probably not super critical. But. Yeah, so I do. I bet small, and I think you have a pretty easy decision at this point.
Yeah, as we've said a few times, you know, can't be worried about flushes, can't be worried about aces. I mean, I have a set. Either way, it's going to be a cooler, so I just close my eyes and chip it. I think it's about a half pot jam, I want to say, because my call would bring it to like 40, and then I jam for 20. So I jam. I mean, do you give any thought to like fold to making a hero fold here?
I think I did consider it very briefly in the moment, like, what are your bluffs here? Like, you have to be, like, it's got to be, like, queens or jacks or tens with a diamond, basically.
Yeah, or king-queen myself or something like that.
Yeah, which you show up with very, it has to be, like, exactly king-queen of clubs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess, like, I don't think I can fold this hand, to be honest with you. Like, it doesn't really make a ton of sense.
Yeah, you have an ace. It's good. And it's
like, you
bad.
Might, would you ever do this? I mean, I guess it doesn't beat any of your value. So like, that's for sure the case. Cause you're never doing this with like ace queen or something. So
right. The worst, I don't think I think my value is definitely, I mean, I don't even know that I'm doing this with like two pair all that often. Like if I have ace five, I don't know that I'm always jamming.
Right. No, probably not.
Because you can show up here with ace king a lot.
Right. So it's interesting, like, what would I rather, like, if I'm taking the small sizing mostly with like ace queen, you know, ace jack, or this ace five, I think I would probably, it's probably better to have a five than to have like a jack that blocks your pocket jacks that you're bluffing with, you know? So I think ace five is a better call than like ace jack or ace queen, probably.
Yeah.
So I think I do have to call here, unfortunately for me.
Yeah. Well, Mike does call, and we own him yet again.
Yeah. Owned. Once more owned.
I then lost quite a bit of my stack back, if I remember correctly, to in another four bet pot where I had, I flopped two pair against a set. So, you know.
Yeah. That wasn't against me though.
No, it wasn't. I gave your money to somebody else.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. So. No, it's really just coolers. I mean, that's just the, you know, that's really whenever I lose a pot, I've always sort of noticed that it tends to be a cooler situation.
So. Yeah. Usually if anyone beats me, I just say they have no life. If I beat anyone, then they're trash.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple stuff really. But I mean, to be fair, you know, that is kind of how it is when you're playing like 200 to 300 big blinds deep. If all the money goes in, chances are it's a cooler.
That's true. You know, that's true. Like, if it's not, you know, you might even be doing something wrong.
Or you found a sick bluff. I think I did see one of your tweets recently, which I strongly identified with, which was my goal in poker is to be a sicko.
Yes, that's right. That's my only goal.
Which is just great. I mean, yeah, we've had hands that we've been like, wow, we could have been sickos here. Hands that we kind of studied up on and realized, wow, I should have been a sicko here. I'm thinking of one hand in particular, like, I think it was, like, you had, like, ace, king, you, like, had top two pair, and you were like, I should have bluff shoved here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it turns out, we put that hand in the solver, and we should have bluff shoved it, and it would have been an absolutely sick bluff. We're going to just keep striving to be as sick as possible.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's fun to try to play, you know, find these fancy plays and, you know, do a lot. Like I said, I'm trying to do a lot more check raising on turns with both value and bluffs and all this different stuff. And at the end of the day, you know, if you're playing 1-3, 2-5, like what's it all worth? It's a big question mark, I would say.
Well, I mean, but it is also like if you're playing 1-3, 2-5, like you're going to get so many bluffs through and it's just so player dependent. I mean, there's two pieces, right? Number one, know the player a little bit. Like, if you have a guy who you know is never going to fold top pair, then don't try to bluff him off top pair. And, you know, on the other end, I mean, the other aspect of playing low stakes is you, and this happens to me all the time, I go in armed with all this fancy knowledge, and then every pot is like five ways. And I'm like, oh yeah, I really can't just start, like, blasting off that much. Although sometimes I give it my best shot anyway.
Yeah, I really think that that's sort of like the next frontier. I mean, poker, like for solvers, I mean, poker is an evolving game all the time. I mean, I've only been playing poker like two or three years, and it's evolved since I've started playing. So certainly, you know, the advent of multi-way solvers is something new. And like the theory that's going to come out of that is going to surprise people, I'm sure. Like it has to, you know, the same way that when solvers sort of became consumer friendly, I wasn't around for that, but the poker community learned a lot really fast, just like crazy stuff that no one would have thought about. And so I'm sure multi-way solvers, I mean, multi-way theory is pretty robust as it is, but I'm sure the solvers are going to upend some of that and expand on it. So,
I mean, I remember I've read old like 2+2 threads, you know, from pre-solvers where people use the term C-bet and what they're talking about is like potting the flop. You know, and that was just like accepted as like, oh, I was the preflop aggressor. I want to just pile money in all the time, which right. kind of has much evolved since then. And I think it would be really funny if, you know, something crazy happened with the multi-way solvers where like, you know, you read the multi-way solver and it's like, actually, you should just be like betting all the time and just putting max pressure on people's ranges, you know, like. Because right. obviously, as you said, the theory is very robust and people kind of have a good understanding that, yes, you're multi-way, you're against a combined range, you should be betting small because everyone shares the responsibility of standing up to you. And you shouldn't be betting, and betting multi-way is polarized. When you do so, you should do it with a polarized range mostly because you have so many ranges to get through. But it would be so sick if the solver just said, nope, just kidding, bet all your hands, bet big. Apply max pressure to these scrubs who just called preflop.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that could be, I mean, we'll see. I'm excited to kind of see what comes out of that. Like, I'm just now getting into the, you know, heads up solver. So I'm not going to try and learn multi-way solutions, but I'll be interested to see what the true solver nerds kind of come out with based on that in the next few years. So.
Yeah. Well, we hope you enjoyed this episode. We please excuse us nerding out for a while. Obviously, a little lower stakes, but also a little more fun because we just got to go hard at each other, and I got to win. That's true. We really enjoy those two.
Did you make the money back from that massive pot you lost last time?
Let me think. I made in big blinds. Yes.
Okay.
In dollars, no.
No, not quite. Cool. All right, man. Pleasure as always. Thanks everyone for tuning in. Comment, like, and subscribe. If you like this type of content where Josh and I discuss the hands we've played against each other and sort of you get to hear both sides, if you like that, let us know. Maybe we can bring on some more guests that we've played hands against and do that type of content. Or if you hate it, tell us that too.
Yeah, let us know what y'all want to see, as long as it's helpful. But yes, please like, comment, subscribe, wherever you are. Leave us a rating if you're listening on Spotify. Whatever builds engagement, we're happy to get.
Bye, everybody.
Have a good one.